This is Remembrance with Kyron Yang. I'm a spiritual health practitioner and an astrologer. Join me on this journey of know thyself, love thyself, heal thyself. Let's get into the episode. Welcome to Remembrance. I'm so happy for all of you who are tuning in into this episode because today I'm going to talk about this idea of purpose, or in the famous Greek word that I fall in love in sometime around 2016 is this word entelechy, right? Entelechy means a potential that is within us that is ready to actualize to its full form. And I'm wondering about this thing of purpose because we're all searching for meaning in life. We are wondering, why are we here? Who am I? And what is this life? What is this human experience that we are looking for? And here with me, I have Norman again, tuning in to be my soundboard, to be this friend of mine who can contribute in this conversation to deepen the insights that we have on this topic.
Hello, hello. Well, purpose has been... I've never heard of the Greek word before, but purpose, the word, has been a word that's been ringing in my head for many years. It changes every chapter.
Oh, for sure.
It changes every few years. You think that you might have one sole purpose, and when you arrive there, you think, oh, this isn't actually what I want. Where do I go? How do I proceed? What is the path I should take? I think this is a callback a little bit to our previous episode. But yeah, I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, I think this is where the misconception comes in, that we think that we have just one purpose and that's it. And when we find this is the Holy Grail and this is it and this is what we're living for, I think that's a misconception. For me, purpose is something that we grow with. Purpose is not something that you do. It's not something that you find. It's not something, it's not that activity, an ambition or a dream that you're going to create. Instead, purpose is actually who you are. So the experience that you say that it changes, the reason why purpose changed for you, because you change. You grew. Your consciousness is elevated to a different level and you're more aware about certain things. Your soul evolved, and that gives you a whole new perspective of this life, this human experience. And of course, purpose is going to change with you.
Yeah.
Right?
I like to think of it as purpose is the child that grows up just as you do. Mm. Right? We have different modes of ourselves. We have our current physical self that's going through this world at the moment. We have our inner self that thinks, that feels, that emotes, that reacts to things, that thinks about different perspectives, that considers. Right? They attract possibilities. And then there's purpose, which is this other version of ourself. Like in some imagery, like I have dreams sometimes about purpose, where purpose can be this North Star that we follow, this horizon that we're chasing after. But how it looked like when I was 10 varies very differently from how it is when I'm like now at like 30.
Yeah, totally. Which brings me back to the word entelechy. And just let me just to define it a little bit for our listeners. So entelechy, imagine it this way, right? That every being in nature has a seed of potential, has its intelligence within them to become its final form. For example, the most common example that we use is the caterpillar, right? It doesn't know that it's going to be a butterfly. But the entelechy of a caterpillar is to be a butterfly, and it takes some form of a journey, right, to shapeshift, to transform, to dissolve, to reimagine itself as a complete new being. So the entelechy for the caterpillar is a butterfly. And what if the plant world, the plant kingdom, what does it look like, right? It's every seed in the plant contains a full-blown tree within it, and its capacity to produce the fruit, and within the fruit, in its own seed. For example, right, the acorn will become an oak tree, but it doesn't know that it's going to be an oak tree. The potential is there, but it takes a certain form of effort, resilience, process, nourishment, support for it to become that tree that it's supposed to be. So I can't help but to think, and I had always felt this in my bones growing up as a kid and all the way till my healing journey and my self-actualization journey, is that there must be a version of me that I'm growing into, right? I don't think personal growth is something that I add something to myself or I remove some aspect of myself to become something else.
Yeah.
It's really more about growing into this more of myself that has already been there, but it's undiscovered because no one told you how to do it.
You don't have instructions for this,
right? Exactly. There's no instruction manual.
You try to ask yourself if we are caterpillars now, and you say, and one caterpillar asks the other, how do you become a butterfly? No one knows the answer to that, right? Mm. But there is probably a beginning, and that comes with introspection, a set of questions that you want to search the answers for, and trusting the process in a way where eventually there may be an opportunity to grow in a certain way, and accepting that. Mm-hmm. And to defeat the fear that prevents us from proceeding towards that direction. Seems like it's a good way to start, like becoming a butterfly per se. And I would think that the reason why fear can defeat people in that manner is that when someone is presented with that thought process, that thought pattern, this potential opportunity. Like, for example, right? Like, when I was young, I wanted to be an actor.
Mm.
Right? Wow. Like, we can get into these stories, of course. I'm more than happy to share this. So, like, I wanted to be an actor, mainly because I was very enamored by the thought of being able to immerse myself in a different world through this script, through this really complicated process. All of a sudden, you're playing a character that you can be for the duration of this experience, which is a very beautiful thing to me. And I thought to myself, why is this attractive to me? Why is this a potential way? Or why is this potentially in alignment with what could be my purpose? And that was because of the deeper nuances of being understood. Mm. Being understood was a very core part of what I wanted.
When you say being understood, you mean like being seen, being heard, being acknowledged for your creative expression.
Yeah, being recognized. Mm. I did not want to be seen with the lenses of what society expects of me as a person due to my attributes, right? Like being an Asian household, knowing the cultural values of the environment around me, etc. I wanted people to know what I truly think. And one of the things that I truly thought was, I find enjoyment in play, in pretending to be a different character, in acting, in immersion. There's something beautiful about that.
Yeah, I think you named something so profound, which is really about, you know, immersing yourself in an art form.
Yeah.
I don't remember who said this, but maybe it's Rumi or someone, some poet of the past that says that find a passion and let it kill you, right?
Mm.
That because it's about, the killing is not about killing yourself, but it's really killing the ego that's in the way, like you said, the fears that comes with inadequacy, feeling not enough, feeling that you're not meeting the expectation of other people, feeling that you're not going to fit in or belong anywhere. And that's the risk of choosing your entelechy, choosing your purpose, choosing to manifest and express it. And just recently, I love this quote because it says, your calling doesn't stop calling until you accept the calling.
Hmm.
And it's going to persist you, it's going to irritate you, it's going to annoy you. You're going to be lucky if it's not a health problem, right? Mine's a health problem because I refuse to listen to it. Right, but most people who actually pursue any form of art are in this process of self-discovery and self-understanding of this deep gnosis of knowing thyself. And as we go into any art form, we're going to criticize ourselves. We're going to judge ourselves because in the process of knowing yourself, you're learning to love yourself even more. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by loving yourself is like, how are you able to see yourself from the perspective of the universe? If we look carefully in nature, right? Caterpillar, butterfly, lions, whatever animals or plants they're in love with, all of them has this intelligence of knowing what's next. Not an intellectual level. Like you say, the caterpillar doesn't know. It's going to be a butterfly. Like, there's no manual. But by just living its life fully, by just allowing to do what it needs to do, by following the intuition, the instinctual connection to nature, it just knows how to be itself. It knows how to get to its entelechy on a very natural way. And you mentioned fear is the biggest human resistance or challenge that stops us from living our entelechy. And it's also stopping us from remembering the truth of who we are, right? We can live in fear and fit ourselves in forever and not manifest our entelechy within that life. So humans need lifetimes of reincarnation, of going again and again, so we make a breakthrough and eventually express who we are and what we are here to do. And what I've realized is that observing nature and observing our human society and how we function is that humans are the only creature made by nature who have forgotten how to live their entelechy, because we stop ourselves for some good reasons and we build systems and structures and educations, you know, systems to that doesn't serve that deeper purpose of what we are here to do.
We were talking about this before the recording, but we were talking about commoditizing experiences. And I think this is related, where we built systems to create order at a larger scale.
Yeah.
Hence, we have civilizations in society, which is very beautiful in itself.
Yeah.
An amazing human invention. But what it does then is that, one, it sets baseline expectations for how you should be as a person, but also what we expect of you as a person. And does that help in pursuing purpose? I don't know. Some might say yes, some might say no. Some might be more aggressive in saying no. But what that means, though, is that now there is a minimum in living, which is the systems in which you participate in. And from there, you begin asking the question, what am I here for? What do I do? What do I want? Why do I want it? You mentioned just now instinct. And instinct is a very beautiful word. It's one of my favorite words ever. Because instinct cannot be described. Some people say gut feeling.
Yeah.
Some people say
intuition.
Intuition, right? My first thought is, if you're on a sports team, you know where to go to score the goal. You know how to help your team better. It's instinct. Your body just moves. It flows along the course of time. When the game is on, you're about to score a goal. You know where to go and you'll shoot and you'll score. It's instinct. And instinct, I feel, is evidence of aliveness. If your instinct is strong, this instinct isn't given to you. It's cultivated within, like internally. And I feel like there's a connection there between instinct and purpose. Mm. Because if you're presented with a potential purpose, your instinct will tell you, go after that. You will find yourself at the end of the journey. And I think that'll be a very beautiful realization. But like you said, we don't have manuals for this. How do we know if we should, like, if we can trust our instinct that way? Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's part of the design of the human experience that the human entelechy is mostly not arrived within one lifetime. And the connection with instinct is obviously connection to nature within us. I think humans are the only creature, again, only in nature that thinks that it's separate from nature, hence labeling nature as nature.
Yep.
And city is city, right? But the truth is, nature is our home, nature is who we are, nature is within us, nature is exactly the core intelligence that is within us that knows how to become the highest version of who we are. But because we possess this ability to be self-aware, to have consciousness, and the way I see it, it's like we're like babies growing up. So you mentioned about having all these education systems, right, that boxes in, and maybe that was our purpose, but maybe that purpose needs to grow and change and transform. Yeah. And for that to transform, just like the caterpillar before it becomes a butterfly, it has to go through the cocoon phase.
Yeah.
And in the cocoon phase, we don't see this, is that the caterpillar, each and every cell is going to dissolve itself. And what happens in the cocoon before the caterpillar becomes a butterfly is that it dissolves into a liquid.
Yeah.
So it's like, imagine that your body that you have right now dissolves like an acid into a liquid. I can't imagine that how that feels like for myself. But what
probably very painful.
Yeah, it will be very painful. And what I feel like what I've seen and heard is that the cells that is in the liquid is something called the imaginal cells. Cells that has this ability to reimagine itself, to activate new potential that lives in the genes of the caterpillar to become a butterfly. So I had always this thought that we're not just here to be humans who survive on a daily basis just to meet our ends of taking good care of our kids, earning enough money, having a roof on top of our head. We're here to thrive. We're here to be artistic, creative, expressive people who will shine light on this world, to be benefactors of nature, to bring out the best of the rawness of nature into something completely new, right? Mm. I think humans are so amazing in a sense that when they are given raw materials, they can transform it into something completely new from their imagination.
Yeah, like art is progression of nature to a certain degree.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right? Art is this evolution of nature, and art is something that's really needed in our world today. And what I've studied with periods of Renaissance is that before there is awakening of people's consciousness, expression of art started first. Paintings, in performing arts. Art started first before the elevation of consciousness and philosophy and science.
There are these outliers in small clusters of like communities. The Renaissance is one key core part of that, where you have these people who started questioning that flow, the general flow of society, and be like, what else can I make in a different direction? And as they create, they express. And as they express, people respond to it and they react to it differently because they see the efforts of someone who has questioned, where does the art go in nature at that time? And they think to themselves, oh, I react this way to it, right? Like the Statue of David, for example, mm-hmm. is normally seen as an amazing masterpiece, which it is. But at the time of its creation, there's going to be a lot of people who would covet it amazingly, but there's going to be others who see it as sin, see it as a disagreement, seen as something very against nature. But consciousness, I think, is a seed that's planted during that time. They see a piece of art and they become provoked by it. I like to see art as forms of provocation, right?
Yeah.
These are just anything that you make, it's an excuse to provoke other people to react a certain way.
It tests the comfort zone of what we think is agreeable or non-agreeable. Yeah.
And that's larger than any system, any form of order, any form of society, etc. And it's also a reminder as well that even if, yes, we are the only species on Earth that separates nature from like city life or civilizational life, but if you think about it, all civilizational life is based on nature. Like it depends on nature for it to continue. Like it's strange almost to separate it.
Yeah.
So to have that up there, to remind ourselves, oh, it is because nature exists, it is because cities exist, it is because order exists that these expressions are possible. We are now given an opportunity upon reacting or responding to this to say, oh, this was where my consciousness is growing. Where else can it go?
Hmm. Wow.
At least that was how I interpreted it when I saw what is essentially the, the soil for my purpose. Seeing different forms of art and films and all of that. And mentioned before in previous episode, I moved from culture to culture. So that is already a shock in itself. I was provoked by a different environment. It wasn't necessarily one person that made it as such, but it was a collective of an entirely different community that has created a different way of life. And they're introducing me to it, or I'm welcomed into it. And I'm like, whoa, my consciousness is expanding because now I know that there are other ways to live differently. Can I add this to my purpose? And that's where all the questions start to multiply. But there's a lot of joy in that, like pursuing and searching for it.
Yeah, I could definitely resonate with you when it comes to that, because I did meet a fair share of travel. And I remember the beginning of it is the search for healing.
Mm.
And the search of healing leads to this question of, okay, who the heck am I,
yeah,
right, in this world? As I start to see more and more diversity of perspectives when it comes to healing, because healing is an art too, an art form too, I start to see that there's no one real threat, there's no one real thing that heals you but you, right? And also in my travels, I have this existential feeling of like, now that I've seen so many perspectives, now that I've seen so many ways to go about it, but what is my way?
Yeah.
Where is home? Where is North Star? Where is like, yeah, where can I find this sense of belonging?
Yeah.
And in that, discover that my existence truly matter.
Yeah. Where am I in all of this?
Yeah, exactly.
Now that I've perceived everything, or now that I've perceived what I've experienced, what can I perceive in myself that I can see by looking within? And that's probably step one of purpose. It's honestly, in all genuine honesty, this is my complaint against language in general. The word purpose, as a word, is fundamentally too weak to describe the gravity of the meaning.
Oh, yeah. I get what you mean. Yeah. I totally get what you mean, because it's a feeling that this just draws you to certain things.
Yeah.
There's curiosity. There is a pull for trying to make sense where you are in all of these things that you experience in life. I don't believe in coincidences in life, and life prepares us with certain trials and tribulations it's like clues, right? It's like feedback from nature, from the subconscious mind, from the universe that, hey, take a look at this.
Yeah.
And the usual feeling that starts with that is, no, let me go back to my comfort zone.
Yeah.
Right? And it just keeps calling and calling. And you see, the purpose, the thing with purpose is that it has been so used. It's just like the word self-love. Love yourself. Right?
I hate it when it's used that way.
Right? You gotta love yourself first before you love other people.
Yeah, yeah. It sounds so, I can't think of a better word to describe it. It sounds too cheap.
Yeah, it sounds too cheap. Sounds too cliche. It sounds too like a little bit like a spiritual bypassing kind of thing.
Yeah.
But there's depth in it.
Yeah.
There is, and it's so truthful that it's so hard to avoid it because it's just right in front of your face. But I think it's the way we talk about it, the way we think about it, because we're so afraid of going to that vulnerable piece of it. It's truth, love, and purpose. These two things require some level of deep honesty that is brutal, that you don't want to hear. It's so inconvenient that you'd rather just tune it off. And this is why when these two aspects of the human experience is externalized, we feel that it's cheap, because all along, it's within you. It's who you are and how you operate. You could argue it's your entelechy, right? And it shouldn't be boxed.
Yeah, it shouldn't. I don't think there's a system for... I don't think there is one static system for finding purpose. I think just as you seek it, the system grows with you.
Mm-hmm.
So there is what the purpose is. And then there is the machinations in which allow the purpose to form. And that also grows. That also shows signs. There's this thing that you keep paying attention to. Maybe you should take a look at it. And maybe the first 3 to 4 times you would have a sense of denial. As in like, oh, that's not part of my life. Why would I care about it? But then it keeps
coming.
Yeah. There's like an itch in the back of your mind.
Yeah.
That's how it was with writing for me.
Yeah.
I didn't care about writing for like the longest time until I think until I was like 19 or 18 or 19. I moved to Australia.
Mm.
And there was this sense of wanting to remember everything. Oh, well, shout out to the show name. This sense of remembering everything or remember every place and memory that I've had in all the places I've lived in, which is at first, there was a sense of fear in the beginning. But I knew that it was something that I wanted to address because it was to answer that question of where am I in all of this?
Right.
There are so many complex order systems, concepts that exist out there. Navigating through all of that. What is there? What is left of me? And how do I define it?
So why do you think these questions, like where am I in all of this, is important to you? What's the gravity of it if you don't answer this question?
You can tell by the silence that I'm having trouble answering this, but get it.
That means I asked the right question.
Yeah, which is the perfect, yeah, which right. is perfect, right? Yeah. Where am I in all of this? The first few words that come to mind are peace and serenity. They start to pop out in my head. If I were to ever have the answers to this question, even to describe this present time, or at least to describe or rationalize all the experiences I've had up until now, it is to reassure that the actions that I've taken, the thoughts that I've had, are reflective of what I want, my desire, who I am, and not given to me by anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And that is an important distinction. Because I feel that there would be a lot of people who would be quite uncomfortable knowing that their purpose in life and the reason for them being on Earth was fed to them on a silver spoon. If I knew growing up that I was going to be A, B, C, D, E, and then I will leave Earth having done A, B, C, D, E, then I will be no different than a machine that was built by society. Like a vacuum cleaner that was made just to vacuum someone's house. And that's it.
Yeah.
Right?
And this topic will become more and more of an urgent topic.
Yes.
Moving through the progress of technology with AI emerging. How am I different than a human, than a robot, than an AI?
Yeah.
I think one thing that AI couldn't do what humans do is to have this ability to recreate something completely new. If you think about it, AI is made out of programs, the same way that our human mind conditionings, our habits are programs. The thing is that we can be a new programmer to our own programs.
Mm.
That's the power of having this consciousness that is ever growing, ever expanding, that is living inside of us. We are able to reprogram the way we frame our life, the way we frame who we are and how we go about life. The AI can't do that.
No, they probably can't. At the moment, the way that it works is you're asking them questions and they are answering based off of collective knowledge databases of everyone who's
based on the known.
It's based on the known.
It's based on the known.
Right.
So, and we have this ability to go to the unknown.
Yeah.
To reimagine things, to receive something that is always a mystery. So for yourself, having that experience that maybe the best answer is I don't know.
Yeah, it is.
Right.
That's actually the correct answer because I feel that purpose is found in the unknown.
Right. And it's embracing that. We don't need to know.
Mm.
We just have to live our life fully. This is why I say purpose is something that is revealed to you. It's like peeling the onion, one layer after another. And you go like, oh, wow, it's deeper than this. Okay. Oh, wow, it's bigger than this.
And you underestimate it too,
right? Yeah. And then right now, because I just launched my book, it's just like, wow, okay. I never imagined that I would ever be a published author, much less writing my own raw, vulnerable stories to share to the world. And then when you're done it and you peel it, it's like, here's two more books that you're going to write.
I actually have a question for you. So as of this recording, your book is out, right? But I wanted to rewind time for a bit.
Mm-hmm.
What element of your purpose compelled you to think, I should write a book?
Okay, it brings me back again to the word entelechy. Mm. When I discovered that word, my mind just blew open. My heart expanded. It was just this visceral feeling from my being, from my soul, that says that there's something about this word that you need to delineate it, to dissect it, and to share it with the world in a creative art form. I don't know why, but I have this thing about people, and I get so heartbroken by people when they are just living life in a numbing way, that they're not fully alive, that they're somehow walking the walking dead. And I think this is why we have so many zombie movies that is being played out on our Netflix and in movies, is because I always see that movies is a reflection of our collective consciousness, right? It's telling us something. The myth, the mythology, the mythos of it, of movies, are always telling the story of what humans are going through, and this is why we create these things, and this is why we are drawn to these things. And I see, I have a thing about people not fully alive, not fully present. Loneliness comes to me not when I'm alone, but when I'm with people who are disconnected from their true self, from their bodies, from their feelings, from their emotion, and they over-intellectualize everything. So I wanted to write a book in the beginning to, again, memorialize my experiences of struggle, pain, so that I leave a mark in this world. I could safely say that my work is done here. I could, tomorrow if I die, I could die in peace. I have that feeling that I'm not afraid of death anymore. But now that I've completed this book, it feels like here's more opportunity to expand more, write more books, share more things, create more things. And I'm like, wow, it's just never ending. So to answer your question, why did I begin to write this book? Hmm. I want to share an aspect of a human experience that is so obvious, that it's so ordinary, that is right in front of our face, that all of us are trying to deny it. I want to share that it's okay not chasing after anything, but to just be yourself ordinarily. And that is the greatest gift to the world. It's about being who you are. And to my surprise, when I soften down, when I drop everything away, truly the enlightenment comes true. The healing comes true. Miracles comes true. Synchronicity after synchronicity comes true into my life. People who I'm supposed to meet come to my life. And it became such a beautiful experience. So we're living in a time where so many of us have this existential crisis, climate change, climate crisis. We don't know if we're going to live for another 20, 30, 40 years, right? If you look at the numbers, it's scary. But I do feel that as humans, when we drop into our entelechy gift and we just play the role of being who we are and we just allow it, we can heal this earth faster than we destroy it. And we can transform so many of the social, political, educational, medical structures, the food industries, so quickly that we birth this enlightened society of people whose values are based on love, whose values are based on authenticity and creativity, values are based on seeing people as people, human to human, appreciating the camaraderie between our brothers and sisters beyond colors, beyond race, beyond genders, beyond what we believe, and having that celebration of the diversity of our creative expression with one another. So deep down, those are my intention of writing this book. And I hope to share that within the pain, within the crisis and trials and tribulation that we have, is designed for us so that we finally remember the truth of who we are and the greatness that we have all along. Yeah, I hope that answered your question.
Yeah. Very beautiful way of putting it. Mm-hmm. I see it as you've answered the question of who am I in all of this? Yes, and you've encapsulated that.
Yeah, I did it for myself.
And yeah, you did it for yourself. Right?
Yeah.
So you wrote this book for yourself, mm-hmm. and you're sharing it.
And this is the first time I did something for myself.
Yeah.
Growing up with achieving academics, going to prestigious universities, traveling to see different teachers and spiritual healers, and everything that I did was out of people's expectation, out of what people want for me. I want to heal. I want to do good in life. I want to be accepted. I want to belong. Yes, I want all of the above, right? Who doesn't want it? But it was really not out of my own sense of autonomy.
Hmm.
Like, even I love dance so much, but the reason why I started is because someone told me I can't dance.
And did it out of spite.
I did it out of spite.
Okay.
Right? Okay. I did it out of anger, resentment, and bitterness for people's ignorance or and lack of understanding of what it means to support and believe in one another unconditionally. That is like, people don't do that anymore. So yeah, I love dance, but the intention of why I went into it wasn't fully from the depths of my soul. But this book, it's what I wanted to do for myself.
Yeah. No one told you to write a book.
No one told me to write a book. It wasn't to be a bestseller. It wasn't to be anything to seek anybody's approval. It's for me to find my own answers.
Yeah. I get that feeling very well. I found greater clarity in my purpose when I started making podcast shows, just purely out of it. It was unprompted. Nobody asked me to buy a microphone and try to write something, etc. My first show was on short story fiction. I wanted to be a writer, actually. First and foremost, before anything else, I wanted to be a writer. And that was unprompted. Nobody told me to be a writer. I just wanted to be a writer. And an extension of that, in doing that, or pursuing that online, rather, was that the story started getting translated into an audio form. And I found so much ease and peace into building this experience in this medium that I cherish a lot. Like, I hold a lot more, and this might be something that we can explore another episode, but I hold a lot of pride in podcasting, like a lot of pride.
Yeah, like, you should.
People who have worked with me in this space, in this medium, know that I kind of act like Gordon Ramsay in this industry. I'm very particular and very strict about it. Also, I'm very forgiving about people who start new shows, etc. But like, people who underestimate how it works, etc. I do, like, it's almost to the point of like spite. It's like, no, you don't understand how in depth this whole thing goes. But the origins of that began with the amount of satisfaction and bliss I get from having a story that I wrote narrated out for people to listen to. And the best part about it is the feedback loops I get from having released all these episodes out. I have people emailing me to say that they've cried to my stories.
Hmm.
And that is the greatest form of appreciation ever in my life. I've never had, like, more than any other thank you, sometimes more than like how other people have said I love you to me from years past.
Yeah.
To know that I've written a story, invented characters, invented a narrative, invented a beginning, a middle, and end about something that doesn't exist in this world, have it out there and to have it told, and someone that I've never met in my life reach out to me and say, thank you, I've cried to your episode, that was very beautiful, is, call back to the very beginning, it's as if I was being seen and recognized.
That's the greatest feedback.
Yeah.
Knowing that you're living your purpose.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? You don't know your purpose until the feedback is given.
Yeah.
And it comes in ways that surprises us. Right? And it's so beautiful for you to share that, because I'm in a similar spot to you, right? Like, right now, in terms of what you have just shared. Like, I've put out a book and I don't know what feedback I'm going to get.
Yeah.
And I guess my question to you is, like, how do you feel when you actually finish that podcast show, The Narratives? And how do you feel prior to launching and after you launched, before you got any feedback?
I'll be honest, I didn't have any proper plan for it, because the very purpose of that was very similar to what you just said. I made that show for myself.
Yeah.
I wanted to have a creative endeavor that was going to possess me, to kill me, as per the words of the quote, to the point of wanting to throw all of my imagination into it. And so I built that show for myself. I wrote those stories for myself. Any direction that I take, I will chase after it. I'll write something about it, and then I'll release it. I'll narrate it. I'll add sound effects, whatever it is, into it. And that was just out there for the world to see. It just so happens that someone stumbled upon that show and then listened to it and then reached out. And not to get too much into the technical details of how the space works, but generally, a lot of people would stumble into the show without you even doing anything about it.
Mm.
But an even smaller percentage of that would go out of their way to contact you.
Yeah.
Whether for good or bad. But they will go out of their way to contact you. That means that without you doing anything from their side, this was something that they paid attention to, compelled them to take a different direction into the unknown to say, I don't know this person, I don't know this podcaster, but I'm going to reach out to them to say thank you.
Yeah.
And they dived into the unknown. I dived into my own unknown by writing the story. They dove into their own, and then we met in the middle somewhere.
Yeah, this goes to show how deeply interconnected we are.
Yeah.
And when we do something out of love, unconditional love, out of passion, out of this little voice that in your head that says, go do this.
Yeah.
What happens is that we're so connected to the field, the awareness, the consciousness that leads to this snowball effect of a fire being lit up, remember helping another person to remember to light another fire for another person. And then before we know it, the wave of inspiration just travels throughout the whole world to remember that, hey, going to the unknown is safe.
Yeah.
Hey, let's connect. Hey, let's be the best version of ourselves that we can actually do.
That was essentially my purpose. It is to be a beacon of light in the unknown. Whoever is willing to go near it, It's safe, it's warm. I welcome anybody to it. How it takes form, I don't know. And I particularly don't care. Like, that show currently is on hiatus at the moment. I'm writing more stories, yes, but like, my direction has taken in many different forms in the unknown, like interview shows, whatever it is. But it was all centering around the voice. It was all centering around the expression of the human body, the written word, the voice, even physical movement, whatever it is. And the best part about it was I found joy in mapping out that unknown. That it's not as scary as people think it to be.
Yeah.
That people can look at this, what we think is an abyss of nothingness, and say, oh, you know what? I'll be fine. I won't lose myself if I walk that way.
Yeah.
Because like you and me, we've released things into the wild. We have done exactly that. And we have been rewarded with the gift of knowing more about who we are truly.
Working on mainstream jobs like being an accountant, being a doctor, being a plumber, being all these kind of like so-called mundane jobs, right? I could imagine people working on this job might feel for themselves that I'm not living a purposeful life. And you might assume that you need to take up an art form or whatever to become purposeful.
Yes.
I don't think that's true, right? I think purpose is not about what you do. You don't have to be an artist, a writer, a dancer, or whatever you think what art is to live life purposefully. I think the medical field is an art form, right? You as a doctor, you need to really find ways of the healing art to look after your patients. As an accountant, there's an art form on how you approach doing accounts. And as a plumber, right? Not every plumber is going to do things the same way. yeah, maybe there's some technical things that you guys have to agree upon, but maybe the way you show up in your business, in your plumbing, is going to show up differently from other people, which brings me to this understanding that purpose is not a role, it's not a responsibility, it's not a job title,
yeah,
but who you are and how you are as you show up in your daily work.
Yeah, it's a state.
It's a state, right? Of being.
It's a state of being.
It's a consciousness.
Yeah. It's right. The addressing the human experience in anything that you do. Like if you're doing accounting, yeah, on paper, accounting can be quite logical, technical, and mechanical to a certain degree. But in the end, what you're helping with the fulfillment of people's lives by ensuring that they don't have to worry about their accounts, right? And for plumbing, it's like you're helping a household.
Yeah.
You're ensuring the peace of their shelter, of their place of belonging, mm-hmm. by making sure that things go well, right? They called out to you for help because they want you to ease and provide peace for them. Like, I think that's a very beautiful way of describing it. Art, or maybe artistic careers or artistic endeavors, are merely an example that showcases it probably the most explicit, but it's not necessarily the only way.
Yeah.
Right? So there's an element of duty upon anything that you can do. So for anyone who's listening, I think if you want to define purpose in where you are right now, the first thing, and I think maybe you have some thoughts on this, the first thing to look at is whatever you're doing now, how do you feel about it?
Yeah, that's number one.
So that's the big one, right? Do you feel indifferent about it? Do you care about the people that you're doing accounts for? Do you feel joy and happiness in your 9-to-5? A lot of people do.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
True. That's
right?
True.
A lot of people do.
Right? That's true.
Yeah. And also, does purpose need to be in those routines? Can it be elsewhere? So that's why we can say, for example, artistic endeavors, but it doesn't have to. Maybe you can do the same thing, but in a different context. So those states, it is not what you do. It is the state, and the state of who you are when you're filled with purpose. Where can you find that? How do you begin? I think that's like the more important question there.
Yeah, and how do you interact with people? What you say, it reminded me of what I teach. I mean, it's to help people write their very own personal philosophy. It's like writing your own manifesto and this traditional thing about creating your vision board and how you're going to look like and how your life's going to be. And how I do it differently from other people is that it's not about what you write.
No.
It's about what you learn about yourself as you write. Right? So this personal philosophy is, in a very simple way, it's guiding principles on how you live your life and how you make choices on a daily basis or a moment-to-moment basis. And there's 5 different steps to it, right? The first step is passion. And passion is like, what do you live for? What do you wake up to? What brings you enthusiasm and curiosity, right? And it's a bunch of things. It's so personal that, and it's so basic. It's not about fulfilling anybody. It's about fulfilling what makes you feel alive in that moment.
Mm.
And from people to people, that's going to change. And then the next step is, okay, now you know what makes you feel alive. And usually it's not about the activity. It's how the activity is being done.
Yeah.
Right? Then it comes to purpose. Purpose is this sense of like, okay, now I know I love this, but how can I contribute to the society? How can I solve certain problems that is unique to me? Maybe I have the solution. Maybe I have the answer. Maybe I have the insights because I spend so much time dabbling with the things I'm passionate about, right? For you, it's podcasting.
Yeah.
You're so passionate about it. You're telling stories that you just want to share something inside of you. But the purpose came when you made it into a gift, a service that someone could appreciate, listen, receive some form of value from you and change their life forever. Right, I think purpose is this aspect of connecting ours, what we love so much, with other people, and in that return, they do the very same thing to another, to their community, to their friends, which brings me as well to the understanding of ikigai.
Ah, yes.
Right, it's so famous, but I have my own definitions to the 4 different quadrants of ikigai, and for those of you who don't know what ikigai is, there's the 4 quadrants. It's like doing what you're good at, doing what you can be paid for, doing what the world needs. And do you know the last one?
You like what you paid for, what the world needs. I forgot the...
The last one. Okay. Yeah, but anyway, I have my own definition, right? To know that if you're living your own, your purpose is that there's a zone of genius. You do it so effortlessly. There's a zone of value, right? That people can take something out of it and it's something that can be monetized. That is a zone of bliss. When you're just engaged in it, there's this intrinsic motivation for you to show up again and again. And then there's a zone of ease. There's a sense of effortlessness to it, right? That you just flow through what your purpose is because it's who you are. How can you be something else? Then the next step, when we figure that whole purpose thing out, right? It's like a North Star. It's like a direction. It's like, again, it's an unknown, but you at least know the compass of where you're going. For some people, it's, in, like you said, an artistic direction of life, a way of living. For some people, it's full-blown on the science. I know a scientist, right? Her name is Dr. Covey Kaur. She's a beautiful woman, amazing person who dived deep into genetics. And I had this opportunity to learn epigenetics from her.
Mm.
She shed science in the most poetic way.
Mm.
And it blew my mind to see the divinity of science on how our genes is expressed. Yeah, I don't want to talk too much about it because I think it serves more justice if you check out Dr. Covey Kaur. I think in the show notes, we can link the TEDx talk that she has about your cells. You got to be the higher version of yourself. Then your cells can behave the way you intend. So we become then a truly embodiment of how we feel, how we are conscious, and how we move through life with intention, right? So anyway, going back to the whole personal philosophy direction is that after purpose, you got to start defining how and imagining how can that look like for you. Now we are going to the unknown.
Hmm.
The unknown is explored through imagination. If you can't imagine, if you can't be childlike again, then you're repeating your programs. You're repeating what you know.
Yeah.
Just like an AI. You're repeating what you have already known and you're just going through the same routine. And the only way to get out of that, you know, what I call stuck creativity, right, with the same information, with the same patterns, is this ability to imagine from a higher level of consciousness. That means you need to elevate your consciousness. You need to elevate your energy. For example, what would love do, right? You personify these higher states. What would bliss do? What would divine grace of this universe comes through you and act upon? What would they do? What would they decide? How would they see the world? Can you see the world from the beauty of life? Can you see the world from the love that emanates from this deep space of the universe? It takes embodiment. It takes this practice of mind-body connection to really connect to that higher level of imagination. Because most people think when it comes to imagination is just thinking. No, right? It does imagination. You have to use all your five senses. You got to feel it. You got to see it. You got to hear it. You got to sense it. You got to know it from the gut level, what that imagination looks like. And that's when this whole neuroplasticity starts to happen in your brain. You're emitting a different brain wave. And then you start seeing possibilities, right? Then after that, having this vision is stepping into the next step of like, who is that person living the vision? We often find role models outside of us. But in this process, you find a role model inside of you. Who is the higher version of yourself? Who is your higher self? What's the intelligence, values, embodiment that you want to be or you already are? As you're living that higher vision that you have imagined, then you learn from that person. It's like learning from your future self. And that person already embodied these qualities that is already living the life that you desire. And then you do the work, which leads down to the fifth element, which is your mission statements, which is your actionable things that you can do on a daily basis. And I always encourage people, dream big, go big. imagine the wildest possibilities that you can create in your life and start extremely small. Take the first step. Type the first word. Record your first sentence. Share your first story. Reach out to the immediate person who might understand you in where you're at and encourage you to take that step. Because the truth is, we need people. We need to create and curate an environment that will support whatever we are trying to create for ourselves in this world.
I'm going to put you on the spot here for a bit, Kyron.
Please do.
When you did yours, what did you write down for Dreaming Big?
So I wanted to create a school.
Interesting. Okay.
A school that has no curriculum, but finding your own curriculum. The curriculum is within you. I want a school that teach you how to find your own education.
That sounds like they're doing this in Colombia, I think. Democratic learning, I think that's the term for it.
Yeah.
It's a school, it's a type of school where it's an open space and there are different corners for different kinds of departments and sciences, etc. You have teachers, but they're not bringing you into a class to force you to learn something. They're just around in the school.
Yeah.
And the kids are free and open to pursue any corner of that school to learn about something, and teachers are there to guide them and to give them to a different direction if they ask of them, right? And I think that's called democratic learning.
Wow, it's very similar concept.
Yeah. I'm sure you have a specific framework in head in my head, but just
actually I don't really have a framework. it's just like if I ask myself, like, down 10-20 years down the road, like, what would I want to offer the world?
Yeah,
it's a school where you come and you learn about yourself. It's about knowing thyself. It's about understanding your curriculum in life, your soul's work in life, and to be in tune with it so that you're connected to your inner mentor, your inner teacher, right? And the teachers who are in this school are just here to be reflections of that, to be mirrors. And so that you know how to find yourself. And in that journey requires a certain skill set. A skill set like self-inquiry, a skill set like processing your emotions, your trauma, the subconscious parts of you that's holding you back. Skill sets like heart-centered leadership. How do you communicate with people? How do you have those difficult conversations? How do you, pitch yourself? Those practical things that we need to live our purpose. And of course, the last thing that I thought about is how do we tap into the higher states of consciousness? For example, flow states. Flow states is our superpower. And it takes a lot of learning to really tap into that. You could go in the esoteric way of doing it, and you can go fully science because so many people are studying this concept of a flow state and how to activate that. It's so crucial in leadership. It's so crucial in group dynamics. It's so crucial when it comes to solving VUCA problems, volatile, uncertain, ambiguous problems, things that you're unable to understand, wicked problems, meaning like things that are constantly changing and it's so difficult to pinpoint where the real problem is. We need flow states. We need to reimagine the way we deal with things and find a higher and creative way of dealing with it.
So like a school to teach about life flow.
Yeah, it's a school that teaches you skill sets to learn about yourself and find the gifts within you, and then you share that gift with the world. I don't see any education school in the world that is currently doing that.
I don't see that as well.
Yeah, but so this is my imagination.
I think that would be an amazing... Okay. I am rooting for you there. That's an amazing dream to... thinking about it just makes me think like, wow, I think that'd be amazing.
Yeah, it's a very simple way of knowing thyself, love thyself, and heal thyself.
Yeah.
It's these three things. But how does it look like? I don't know.
Yeah. My first thought was... I mean, we're coming to the end of the episode, but like my first imagination or my first image of it was that it doesn't even look like a school. It just looks like a village. And there's just mentors.
Oh my God. Yeah, exactly. Right. That's the imagery that I have.
It's like a small town.
Small town. It's mentors. It's nature connected. Yeah. This reminds me of a place in the US started by the Human Potential Movement. It's called Esalen, ESALEN. And it's an institute where you can do retreats there and you choose whatever you want to learn. Mm. There are teachers and workshops and yogas and organic food and farm that is there, and you do whatever you want to do. But you come here and then you choose your education. Yeah, and want to extend that, that idea a little bit further of like giving some structure and guidance when it comes to being the best version of who you are.
Mm.
Right? I'll bring things like astrology. I'll bring things like the lifeline technique that helps you to work with your subconscious mind. I'll bring things like heart-centered leadership that I learned from Linda Tucker from South Africa, who runs this sanctuary for lions, and to learn leadership from lions rather than from humans, because they seem to know more than us.
Hmm.
Right? It's to humble yourself and let nature teach you, to reconnect to the nature within you. So yeah, of course, I don't know how this school is going to look like, but the idea is definitely forming itself.
The wonderful thing about, and this is why I love podcasting, the wonderful thing about this, right, is even if the idea is in progress of being constructed, there may be someone out there listening who can add on to it, who can reach out and say, here are some more resources, or I can help you out.
Or they're already doing it.
Or they're already doing it, right? And they're just yeah. saying, hey, look, hey,
let's collaborate and make it bigger, right?
Make it bigger, right?
Yeah, if you are someone like that, hey, reach out to
me. Please, yeah, because I think it'd be amazing to see it here. I think it'd be amazing to see more examples of it pop up around the world. That is an extension of my dreaming big. I want to be known around the world for my voice, but not my face. So it would be to the point where I have to keep quiet while being around. Because as someone, as soon as I start speaking, people would know. Oh, you're him from the podcasting space.
That's so special.
And it's already happened. Like, people have already started recognizing my voice. And I'm like, oh, okay, thank you for listening to my show, or something like that.
Yeah.
But like you said, these big dreams start in small increments. And even just the mention of it brings it into tangible reality. And that's what makes it so amazing.
Yeah.
So yeah, I can agree with that. I think that's something to look forward to. I think also, yeah, reaching up to an hour.
Yeah.
Is there a, from the thoughts on purpose, on personal philosophy, or on even just taking the first step to defining someone's relationship with purpose, do you have any final thoughts to share?
Purpose is this obvious thing that's right in front of your face. Just like the fish in the water doesn't know it's swimming around water.
Yeah.
So I guess the first step is to really pause, to drop whatever that you're doing, to consciously and intentionally create space in your life. For me, I schedule empty days so that I can be inspired by life, so I can be in this place of receptivity. I think we are too busy these days. We are overcommitted. We are too tired. We have no energy to even go into this space of self-inquiry. Our mind gets in the way. We feel overly busy and we get worried about the next thing. But if you give yourself this opportunity to live in the moment for a moment, give yourself that chance, I am sure you start remembering. I am sure you start recalling the things that used to inspire you, make you feel alive, and you just have to follow that cookie crumb. And just like Joseph Campbell have said in his famous quote, follow your bliss. All right.
Lovely. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Thanks for tuning in. Thank you for listening to this show. Follow Mind Journey by subscribing to the show on your favorite podcast listening app. May you be blessed with wonder and ordinary magic in your journey of remembrance. I will see you in the next episode. Take care.